The following is a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
Welcome to Cartoon Fun. It's Cartoonerific. Yeah!
Well, welcome and happy new year. This is Brian Mitchell, and this is the Cartoonerific podcast, classic animated cartoons, and I am the host. What we're going to do today is something a little bit different. This podcast was actually supposed to air in December, but we couldn't get it all together in time, and it's now a post-holiday podcast. We are going to be talking about 12 holiday specials, some famous, some that have been played every year, and some that have not on either streaming or on network or in syndication. But they're all really good, I think. But we didn't want to do a holiday countdown. Basically, we just wanted to do a roundup of 12 holiday specials. And so this episode is called the 12 specials of Christmas, or the 12 specials of post-Christmas, I should say. But anyway, we're going to be looking at 12 holiday specials. And like I said, some of them are, some people have never heard of some of these specials, and maybe you have and never watched them. So we're going to talk about them. We're going to give our take on it, and we're not necessarily going to count them down. We're not going to say, well, this is the worst of the 12 and this is the best of the 12. But actually, we do name our favorite, and actually all of them are favorites for different reasons. But some have aged better than others, and some weren't really all that great to begin with, but they, you know, they were put out there and kids love them. And so they've kind of lasted over the years. And some of them have been forgotten or partially forgotten. So anyway, we're going to talk about all that stuff. And who better to talk about these specials with than with Marjorie Sturt? She's been a guest many, many times. She actually, the last couple of episodes, she interviewed me for the podcast. And so this was actually supposed to come after other interviews, but because Christmas has just passed, we want to kind of just get into this right away and do it and get it out there and then just go with our regular guests. So I think it's going to be an interesting show because we're going to talk a little bit about the stories and what we liked and what we didn't like about them and talk about how they've aged. And some of them, I'm sure you're very familiar with. Of course, we're going to be talking about Rudolph and the Grinch and A Charlie Brown Christmas, but we're also going to talk about some more obscure ones like The Small One, which was a Disney film, and also Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol and Richard Williams' A Christmas Carol. We talk about three Christmas carols, animated Christmas carols on this show. So it is a long one. It's 2 hours. And so I had to make a decision whether, and we have aired long episodes before, but I had to make a decision on how to do this. And, you know, I find 1 hour, an hour and 10 minutes is a good time because some people listen to this show while they're driving to work or driving home from work. And some people just have, you know, an hour at home to sit down and listen to it. So 2 hours is a big commitment. And so I decided to break this up into two episodes. But what we're going to do is you're not going to have to wait a week for them. You'll get the first part tonight. And then basically, if you're listening to this 2 weeks later, you could just jump right into the next episode. But in the case of if you're just listening to it for the first time, when this comes out, you're only going to have to wait a couple of days for the second part to be uploaded. So basically, it'll be a three-day wait. So you will listen to the first episode now and then the next episode in a couple of days. Or like I said, if it's you're listening to this a week later, you can just jump right into the second part. So anyway, stay tuned. All right. And we'll be right back with the 12 specials of Christmas on the Cartoonerific podcast.
You're listening to the Cartoonerific podcast, classic animated cartoons with your host animator, Brian Mitchell. And now it's time for our special Cartoonerific guest.
Well, today on the Cartoonerific podcast, we're going to be going back a few weeks. We're doing our Christmas recap of some of the holiday specials. And we're not talking about the Christmas movies. We're talking about holiday specials. And we're including the hand-animated ones as well as the stop-motion ones. And today we've brought in Ms. Marjorie Stewart. She's been a guest on our previous podcast. She's a design expert. And she's never really watched any of these shows. And we wanted to pick out maybe about 12 of them, some popular ones, some not so popular, some kind of obscure. And we had her watch these 12 specials. So this is not a countdown in the traditional sense, like the top 10 or the top 12. But anyway, I want to welcome Marjorie Stewart here. Hi, Marjorie. How are you doing? How was your holiday?
Beautiful, as always. You know, but also there's always a little bit of stress. But other than that, it was lovely.
Well, good.
Yeah, a little bit rushed.
We're well after the new year now, and we're looking at a Christmas tree here, and it's very festive. And so we're going to be talking about the 12 Christmas specials. It's the 12 Christmas specials of Christmas, and yeah, that sounds weird. But I gave you this assignment, and we're going to be talking about probably the most famous, which is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Santa Claus Coming to Town and the Grinch and all these other ones. And were you able to watch them all?
Yes, I was. First of all, did you have a nice Christmas break?
I had a wonderful Christmas break.
Good.
I did. The most wonderful Christmas break of the year. Yeah. So.
The most wonderful Christmas break. How many Christmas breaks a year?
Well, it was the most wonderful.
I like three.
Yeah, there you go.
No, okay. So, no, I did. I Brian, I watched them. Okay, it's like crashing for, you know, your final exams when you give me this much of a workload.
Yeah, but you didn't watch them all one night, did you?
No. I tried to space it out as much as I can. But bear in mind, folks, I know, again, you're gobsmacked to hear. I know of some of these, and I've seen clips of a few of them.
What clips have you seen?
Well,
you actually saw the shows.
But I have never seen them start to finish, ever, not my whole life.
So what were the ones you saw?
The ones that I am I'm familiar with clips, like little smidgens here and there. Obviously, Grinch. Mm-hmm. Of course, Rudolph, which is, I think, I'm pretty sure everyone's number one favorite. And I have seen little images, and I don't know whether they were still or used in a montage or what have you, but Mr. Magoo trembling in his nightshirt in his four-poster bed. So that's just pretty much it, folks.
Yeah, that's pretty minute part of that show.
But there were so many others, and they were all new to me, and some I really, really loved, and some I got through. Through them.
Right. Well, we'll go through
them. They were really great.
Well, I love them all for different reasons. And I think a lot of it is nostalgic because even, you know, I'll acknowledge stuff like, well, this doesn't make too much sense, whatever. So please don't hold our feet to the fire on this. This is just basically, this is Marjorie not growing up with this stuff and seeing it for the first time. And so, you know, she's looking at it from a different microscope, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or, and with me, it's kind of like a lot of them have charm to them. And some have aged well and some have not. And so let's talk about one of the ones that we saw. And it's actually the first of three Christmas Carol specials, right?
There were three A Christmas Carol, you know, based numbers that you assigned me. And if I don't watch one of those again next year, I'm good.
All right. So let's start with Mickey's Christmas Carol. It came out, I think, in 1982, 1983, somewhere around there. And Mickey's Christmas Carol was an interesting take on the Christmas Carol. It's using all the traditional story elements, but it's using the Disney characters. And I'm sure a lot of you listening to this have watched it. But it was it started off as a record album. This is a little bit of the history on it. Started off as a record album that you could buy at a store and bring it home, and it was a storyteller. And so it told the story with Mickey Mouse's Bob Cratchit and Scrooge McDuck, and it was voiced by Alan Young, who was he was the star of Mr. Ed, if anybody remembers that show, which ran for like 5 or 6 years on CBS back in the day. But he came up, I guess he came into it with another gentleman, and they created this storyteller. And it just, I saw this storyteller in the 70s, and I thought, this would be great. Why wouldn't they make this as an animated short? And so one of the story people at Disney, his name was Bernie Mattinson, he just passed away. He saw the record album, he listened to it, and he thought this would be a great thing to do as a movie or as a holiday special. And so he brought it to the head of Disney at the time, and the head of Disney kind of played with him a little bit, and you know, as far as okaying it and not okaying it, whatever. But anyway, he thought it was a great idea, and he gave him the go ahead to do it. And so they did it over the course of about a year or two. And they came up with, they fashioned the story really quick, and they were able to produce this thing. And so, and that's basically the story of how that was done. It went into theaters, I believe, with mm-hmm. the re-release of The Rescuers. So anyway, when it came out, I think there was a lot of good things said about it. And what was your take about it? I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's a very streamlined tale.
Yeah.
Tells a story in a very succinct way.
Yes.
And the art direction on it is really, really wonderful. The titles are wonderful, too. What did you think?
I did. As you know, I'm not like a big Mickey Mouse, you know, crazed fan. I really like it because It's a very important story, and it's an important time of year to tell a story like that, to relate a story like that, you know, to young and old, and just as a reminder, you know, what we're really doing here with that holiday. But it is a story that if you really take it straight on the way it's supposed to be delivered or the way Charles Dickens intended it, it's very heavy. And there are things in there that are just absolutely heartbreaking. And to have it sort of be a way of relaying the story and the message with, you know, Scrooge McDuck and Mickey. And, you know, it's, I found it very palatable. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm really glad that you told me to watch it. So thank you. I had no idea that they made it.
Yeah, it was an interesting film when it came out. And when I saw it, I really liked it, you know. All the animators that worked on that ended up going on and making The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin. And they were basically, they became the heads of the Disney animation department. But at this point, you know, that film had to be made in such a way that was told the story, got its point across in a very smooth way. And I've seen A Christmas Carol done in live action and not done as well in some of the live action movies as it was done in this 25. It's about a 26 minute short.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very well directed, and from a top Disney veteran who had worked on The Rescuers and worked on Robin Hood and worked on all these films from the 50s right up.
Yeah.
And so he ended up staying with Disney. And like I said, he was working there up until last year on story, just still doing story work. And he basically, he passed away. But, What a great little short subject, right?
Yes, without it, it reaches the depths that it ought to, but it doesn't go horribly dark.
Not too dark.
Know? And, yeah. But in even in not doing so, it conveys the message and the lesson that we
and there's are a little tear
to,
there. There's
supposed a, to. Well, there's always tears with me. So what can I say?
Yeah, they're definitely
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's move on to another one that you were assigned. And this one is, I don't think it's one of the, it's not one of the top ones. I happen to like it, but I think it ends on a weird way. But it's a Rankin Bass short that they did, called Nestor the Long-Eared Christmas Donkey.
Yes.
And there's a lot of sweetness to it, but there is some things about it that's kind of reminiscent of Dumbo, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's Nestor. That's one of the lines throughout the movie.
Yeah.
What'd you like about that?
I know you why you say the end was weird. Because I get it.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe Nestor just wasn't a grudge holder. What can I say?
I don't know.
But
yeah, we're not gonna give away this story,
we're not gonna give away the story.
But the
spoil it.
But the guy who basically has this what would you call that? It's a where all the animals are in. The
stable.
Yeah, yes. Hard word to think of for me.
Yeah.
All these animals in the stable, he's like an ogre. And he's really rotten to the core. And he basically physically abuses this character. And at the end, Nestor kind of comes back and the problem that I had was like, yay, he's jumping up and down because Nestor is back. And meanwhile, a bunch of horrible things happened in between. So
he's this sweet little burro with these very, very long ears. So he's of absolutely no, and his ears keep getting in the way of his work.
Yes.
And so he's useless. And the stable owner just he's a thorn in his side, and then some very sad things happen along his journey as he's ostracized, and but then you know as being the Christmas donkey, he's
guided to something greater.
He is guided to something greater.
Yeah, I happen to really like the special, but I just feel like that whole end part is just like, wow, I don't think it kills it for me, but it's just like, I'm like, what? You know, you're going back to your abuser. So,
yes, I think you should have stayed with Joseph and Mary, in my personal opinion.
I think he should have. I think he should have. But
just a question for you, and this is random, because this is one of my first, like, you know, this is like stop animation Christmas specials that you're exposing me to.
Yeah.
How do they get the tears, the water, the tears to come out of the puppet's eyes when they
do? Well, it's stop motion. So basically they're probably placing something that it could be glue.
Glycerin.
Yeah, it could be anything that's kind of like it, you know, it might, they might show it forming a little bit. And then, the, you know, because it's frame by frame, then they advance the tear and then it rolls down the cheek. So, you know, yeah. So it's done frame by frame.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because they swell. They literally sometimes swell up in the eyes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, there's different ways of doing everything, but, you know, but that would be the way I would do it. I'd find a way of, you know, putting something that's like plastic where it has a little bit of a reflection that kind of, and I'm sure, you know, when they're doing these things, they run tests to make sure that it looks like what it's supposed to look like. If it doesn't, then, you know, they may have to change it up and try something else. So I'm sure there's tests that people are doing throughout the process. Because there's certain thing, and this is a Rankin Bass production, Nestor. I don't know. Did we say that? They had a studio in, all those things were animated overseas. They were all animated in Taiwan, I believe. And so they had a team over there that they used for these specials from year to year to year. And so I would think that eventually they would figure out water, how to make water, make it look like water in the background and stuff like that, and figure out how to make these stop motion figures fly. And, you know, and a lot of it could be just a simple trick of laying the laying the characters down on a plate of glass and then shooting through to like a background and having the camera above.
Right.
Rather than, this way you can make something travel across, look like it's traveling across the sky, but it's like it's laying down flat on a surface. So, you know, there's lots of ways, and they can change that up, you know. So some of the scenes they may be shooting straight on with a camera, but then just like animation is shot through plates of glass and you have the camera above it. So you can you could simulate characters flying that way. So,
well, I mean, bear in mind all this stop animation, you know, this stop motion animation, excuse me, is it might be simple to people who have been exposed to it. I haven't really seen a lot of it. I did see, you know, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, and I had to watch the whole how they went about making it because I was so blown away by all of that. And it's pretty. I think it's pretty fascinating.
It's complicated. Yeah, that, you know, it's, they had a lot of money. And, you know, today we have computer technology. So when they're planning out shots, they can have something kind of like a controlled camera. I'm sorry. They could have a camera that basically it's moving in and out of the artwork or in and out of the puppets, right? And then they can concentrate on the puppets a little bit more because of the budgets. There was a gentleman back in the 40s, 30s and 40s named George Pal, who did these puppet tunes. And the puppet tunes were basically stop motion puppets, but they had replaceable heads and arms and hands. And so they had all different, like they could have the faces actually change through replacement heads.
Oh, neat.
And it sounds really complicated to me because you have to create a brand new puppet head or mouth or whatever and then insert it and make sure that it's smooth. And his stuff looked extremely smooth, but then again, he had the budget to do those things. And the Rankin Bass stuff, they were working on TV budgets. And so I'm sure they spent a lot more money on the music and probably voices, getting good voices. Also, they would use names. And I forget who was the narrator for Nestor because the way they operated Rankin Bass was they would have, like, for Rudolph, they'd have Burl Ives. Santa Claus Coming to Town, it would be Jimmy Durante, not Jimmy Durante, I'm sorry. It would have Mickey Rooney and Keenan Wynn and Fred Astaire. All names, and then Frosty the Snowman, Jimmy Durante, and Jackie Vernon, who was a name at the time. Nobody knows who he is now. Nobody knows who Fred Astaire is. You know, when kids watch it, it's not, oh, wow, Fred Astaire. Nobody's doing that,
right?
You know, unless you're a Fred Astaire fan, you know. So, but at the time, these were names, and they kind of helped propel the specials. So they spent the money there. Spent the money on the music, and then whatever was left or whatever they had allotted for the stop motion animation probably wasn't as much as what they paid for that front end stuff and the orchestrations and all that. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, we had Rick Goldschmidt on, who's an expert about that stuff. I'm sure he'd say, no, they spent quite a bit of money on the stop motion animation, but it does have a herky, and I said this before in when I interviewed Rick, and I said, it does have a herky jerky quality.
Yes.
It's not exactly smooth. You know, mm-hmm. some of it is, and then some of it is like, no. But there's something about the charm of the writing and of those puppets. And the music really does a lot to really pull that across. And definitely the voice character, the voice acting.
The voices in the music definitely bring it. The stilted, herky-jerky, like you call it, motion. There's sometimes I found myself nodding off at some of them.
But oh, okay.
That's okay. I woke up and I watched the whole thing
again. Okay. I think you, but did you watch all of Nestor?
Yes.
You saw all of Nestor.
Oh, yes,
okay.
Yes. I saw all of it. I liked Nestor. I know we agree about the ending, but I enjoyed Nestor. Maybe it's because I love the Christmas donkey. I can't help it.
Okay. Well, I like Nestor. Don't worry, Nestor. We still love you. <All right. laughs> So I recommend people seeing that if you haven't seen it. I think it's, I think it's pretty cute. I think I was really, I'll tell you, I'm not, I don't shed a tear that often. Well, maybe sometimes. I guess I'm kind of a softy, but I kind of shed a tear during that special.
There were some very hurtful things to witness.
There is.
Mm-hmm. And it had a happy ending.
It has a happy ending. It does. All right. Should we move on?
Sure.
Okay.
There's a lot.
There is a lot. We're going to try to get through. We're going to get through all these, I think. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Here's one that I know you didn't really care for, and it's another Rankin Bass one, and it's considered a classic. It's this year will be 50 years. It's been around. It came out in 1974. And it is the Twas the Night Before Christmas. And this is a Cell animated short. Once again, the pre-production was done in New York, and then it was sent out to Taiwan, where it was animated. And I like the special. I have problems with it. I've always had a problem with the Santa Claus in it. Mm-hmm. Because when Santa actually appears, I'm like, that's not Santa. And I remember watching this as a kid. I was like 12 or 13 when
like,
I saw
it. I ain't buying it.
And I was like, yeah. And I was like, what is this leprechaun doing here? You know? But I watched it and I did like it, and I just felt, well, it's kind of weird, but it's, and watching it today, I have to admit the story doesn't grab. It's kind of a goofy kind of story.
Yes.
What do you remember of the story? No, go for it, because this thing is out there. People have seen it, so
it's out there.
Yeah.
I didn't care for it, but I'm certainly not going to begrudge people who want to watch an animated Christmas special and they need something new and they ain't cranking them out. You know, if it's 50 years, been kicking around for 50 years.
It's 50 years this year.
All right, well, then somebody likes it.
2024. Okay. Okay.
I liked it. What I did like was that the boy who's really a young mouse,
right?
Who's a skeptic of Santa,
and he's a brainiac. They call him a brainiac.
He's a brainiac.
Yes.
Thinks he's smarter than everybody. He's got it all figured out, and you know what? He just doesn't. And I'm fine with that lesson in the very end.
Which is?
And he makes it right that Santa is.
He makes it right, but.
He makes it right.
Yeah. My one criticism.
He's messing around with Santa.
He is. The one criticism I really have about that special is the fact that he says that Santa Claus is fake, it's a fraud or whatever, and he writes to Santa to tell him so. Which, and Santa gets angry.
And then like, he punishes
the whole town.
Yes.
So there's something wrong with that to me.
It was villainry.
Yeah. I think so.
Yes.
Yeah, or I'm not sure if he writes to Santa or he sends something to the town paper.
Oh, no, but he writes to the town. Oh, that's right.
I think he writes
to the... He publishes an article in the town paper, which, right, of course, Santa reads.
Yeah, because Santa's up on...
Yeah.
I forgot the name of the town. Mouse Town.
Smallville, USA.
Smallville,
Wall Street
USA.
Journal and New York Times.
Something like that, yeah.
Those are Santa's subscriptions.
Yeah. But, Santa gets really angry and he just... it's like, I'm not coming to your town. I don't care. That one kid is representing all of you, so.
I don't know. Is that really how Santa is? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's part of my problem with it.
I agree.
And then he comes and he's basically.
I mean, I'm pretty sure there is a wisecracker in every town who wants to debunk the whole Kris Kringle thing.
Yeah.
But
plus this tiny mouse basically destroys a clock that is going to sing this song to Santa Claus.
Not nice.
Not nice. No.
He does a lot of not nice things, but he learns his lesson in the end.
He learns his lesson, kind of.
I don't know. I got through it. I clearly watched it.
Right.
Check.
I like it. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like them all.
I didn't like the colors as much as I do in others.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Right.
And the facial expressions were, don't know. It wasn't
your thing.
My number of the 12 that you assigned.
The 12 specials of Christmas.
This one's way down on the
It's low. Down on the list. So you would not.
It's not the Partridge in the
Pear Tree. You're not watching it again.
No, please, no.
All right. The way Rankin Bass used to do these specials was basically they would pick a song and try to get the rights for the song and then do it. And I think, so they did, one of the last specials was Santa Baby, which I don't think I've ever watched. But they would take a song like Frosty the Snowman or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and they turn it into a special. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of an instant hook.
Right.
For the show, Santa Claus Coming to Town. 'Twas the Night Before Christmas is not a song. It's a poem, but it's been done as a audio recording over time. And I guess they just felt, well, this is something we can do. And maybe it's not as successful as some of the other specials that they did. But it's still very popular. I mean, it's still out there 50 years later, and somebody likes it.
That says something.
It says something.
That actually does say a lot. But it's interesting how some of the Christmas specials are based on a pre-existing Christmas song, and then other Christmas specials actually generate their own song that becomes some amazing, hit.
Well, I think, we'll talk about some of these other ones, but we watched, let's see, I'm sorry, I'm getting lost here.
Well, there were 12, it's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. I think, with the Rankin Bass specials, they, like with Rudolph, they would write other tunes, right? So on Nestor, I don't remember, was there any songs in that?
There was a pretty song that the mother sang.
Oh, okay.
Nestor.
Yeah, I don't want to backtrack, but yeah. But they generally would come up with a couple of tunes to kind of help move the thing along.
Mm-hmm.
And the songs were done really well done. I mean, on some of these, they had this guy, Maury Laws, who wrote most of the music. And I thought he was a brilliant, brilliant songwriter for definitely for, you know, television. But these songs could have played in movies, too. You know, they're good songs and they've lasted. Mm-hmm. There's one that basically was in a special that we did not watch, which was the Year Without a Santa Claus, where there is a song called, you know, I'm Mr. Snow Miser, or I'm Mr. Heat Miser. And it's basically a very popular song. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things that shows up on radio stations around the country during the Christmas holiday. But it's not necessarily a Christmas song. It's just kind of by association. And so, anyway, they would do that a lot with the Rankin Bass specials, you know, keep the music going, kind of keeps it entertaining.
Oh, yeah, yeah. For sure. They had some good musical numbers in
They did. Okay, so let's go to a non-Rankin Bass special. And I think we should talk about this. This is A Christmas Carol, but this is the second one that we're going to be talking about, because it seems like everybody's done A Christmas Carol in some form, mm-hmm. in animation. There's one called The Stingiest Man in Town, which I think is a Rankin Bass one, which we didn't see. But this one was from Richard Williams, who did the direction of Roger Rabbit. I don't know if you ever saw Roger Rabbit. But he was, but Richard Williams, okay, you didn't see Roger Rabbit. Roger Rabbit's a live action animated movie. But he did a holiday special. And I think this, actually, I think it was in theaters, maybe not in the United States, but it was, it ended up on TV on ABC. Mm-hmm. And the way it ended up on ABC was Chuck Jones, who was a director of some of the great Looney Tunes cartoons. Mm-hmm. Later, he did Tom and Jerry, and he did the Grinch special. He's the director of the Grinch. He's a very famous animator. He became head of ABC Children's Television, and so he found out about Christmas Carol by Richard Williams, and he ended up producing it. Mm-hmm. So, we watched that, and the problem with that is we didn't really have a great copy of it, but I think we got pretty much the substance of it. Mm-hmm. And so, this special was not done very cutesy. It was done very serious. I think a lot of the animation was done directly onto celluloids, versus like most of the animation is done on paper and then basically it's traced onto celluloid, mm-hmm. and then painted. And in this particular one, I believe they used grease pencil onto the cells and then painted it on the back, but there was no paper. So they animated directly onto the cells. That's what I remember about this. And I wasn't able to do too much research on this, but anyway, it came out. And it aired for like maybe 2 years, and then went away. Uh-huh. And I think it's a wonderful special. But it, what's your take on it?
This is the one that looked very painterly, and
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
yeah.
It was
I really enjoyed it. I definitely liked the Christmas present spirit, mm-hmm. and I thought that was beautifully done.
Right.
And the Christmas past.
Yeah.
Because they were just, they were enjoyable. They were entertaining, and they were more sympathetic in a way.
Yeah. I feel like the special, as far as the animation goes, I think it was really beautifully animated.
I enjoyed the animation a lot.
It's very well drafted. And it has a very graphic quality to it. It's also a lot of muted, so we talk about this a lot, muted colors. And but I feel like it's kind of going into the filmmaking aspect of it. I like it, but I like it for a lot of different reasons. But I don't feel like it's very satisfying to me at the end. as a story. I feel like it's very choppy, because I think with Mickey's Christmas Carol, where there's a flow from beginning to end,
yeah,
and has some sort of a satisfying ending where you feel like, okay, Scrooge is, you know, it's kind of come out and, you know, he's like, okay, I've changed, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm good now, you know, and he's bringing some joy and there's a lightheartedness to him and stuff. But what I feel about Richard Williams' Christmas Carol is, even though it's masterfully done, I just feel like the story doesn't flow. And I feel like it's they were trying to put too much into it to cram it into this 25, 26 minute running time.
I think it ran out of steam in towards the end. I think that was my perception of I thoroughly enjoyed it, but it did kind of fizzle out towards the end there.
Yeah, I'm a big a big believer in, when you do a story, there should be some payoff at the end. There needs to be a payoff at the end. Whether it's good or bad or whatever, there needs to be something that it's like, boom, you know. And, I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, like big over-the-top production, but there has to be some payoff at the end of a piece like that. It has to be, and it has to be satisfying to the audience, because the way I look at it is the audience is investing time.
For the journey that they've drawn you on.
Right.
They should give the ending as much of a gravitas as the time that you've invested in.
Exactly.
In theretofore. Yeah, I think I agree with. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of tuckered out of steam at the end. I don't know. But I did love the painting and the muted colors and the subtleties and the movement were very fluid. And yeah, I did like it.
It's
and a lot.
Yeah.
But they could have put a little more into wrapping it up.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, as a whole, I just don't feel it's as satisfying. I still believe that people should watch it. I mean, you watched it on YouTube and that's where I saw it. And it's an interesting piece. It's just not, I don't feel it. It's probably not the greatest Christmas Carol I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny about that too, is they actually use Alistair Sim, who is in one of the classic versions of A Christmas Carol. And Richard Williams brought him back to voice this special. So anyway, you know,
I think it's worth a watch.
I think it's really well worth a watch. So even if you didn't watch it during the holiday season, you know, you could watch it now, you know. And I know it's available on YouTube. So it's A Christmas Carol. It's 1971, I believe. And once again, Richard Williams and Chuck Jones produced it. So there you go. Are we ready to move on?
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to get away from the Christmas Carol thing. Let's see. I think we should talk a little bit about Frosty the Snowman.
Okay.
And I guess everybody's noticing there's a lot of Rankin Bass on this list. They produced, I believe, somewhere around close to 20 Christmas specials between 1964, which was Rudolph, until like maybe the early 80s, very early 80s. So, you know, you count that up, that's close to a special a year.
That's a lot.
That they were doing. But anyway, this particular special, what are we talking about again? I lost track.
Frosty
the Snowman. Sorry. Frosty the Snowman. Okay.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Yes.
It was interesting.
It is interesting.
It was very colorful characters, I have to say.
Yes, they are. And so anyway, Jimmy Durante is the narrator. Cha-cha-cha-cha. Yeah. So he's the narrator of the special, and it's Jackie Vernon is the Frosty character. And then it's rounded out by Paul Frees, who was the cop and the ticket master doing the voices. And we were talking before the podcast, and Paul Frees was a basically, a lot of people used him. He was half the Beatles in the Beatles animated TV series. He's a ghost host in the Haunted Mansion. He was Ludwig von Drake for Disney, which is a duck character. And did a lot of voices on a lot of different things. And on the Rankin-Bass specials, he's almost on every one. I think with the exception of the Rudolph. But for Frosty the Snowman, he does a bunch of character voices there. And in all the specials that came after, they just kept calling him up. And he would do two or three, four or five different incidental.
He was your guy.
He was a very talented guy. But anyway, Frosty the Snowman has a very simple storyline, but it kind of takes this 2 or 3 minute song and stretches it out to about 25 minutes. And I think it does it in a breezy fashion. Mm-hmm. So what'd you think of it?
I was very amused. I think the thing that amused me the most was Frosty's particular accent. Was it Yonkers or
The Bronx?
The Bronx.
I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was very, very sweet, you know, big, gentle giant made of snow. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the adventure, his adventure for his, like, 124 hours that he was given to visit Earth.
Before he dies.
He melts.
And then he's resurrected.
He will be back again.
Yes.
Someday.
Because he's a man made of snow.
Water just keeps doing its thing.
Yeah, it's magical.
But, you know, when he's
he wets himself. He's like,
Karen, I don't want you to freeze to death. You know, kind of.
But he's holding her throughout the whole thing.
I got a kick out of that.
Yeah. Once again, it's a special I really like. But, there is a suspension of logic and practically all of these things, maybe not all, but it does happen. And here, you know, they're riding in a ice cream car and on a railroad, which I've yet to seen one because I'd be stolen away on it. But there are things like she's freezing and he's holding her and he's basically an ice cube.
So he ain't doing her any favors.
He's not doing her any favors, yeah. So, he's making it worse just by being who he is. But, like I said, we tend to look over or around these things.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's entertainment for the kiddos.
For the kiddos, Mm-hmm. But it's I still like the special. I think it still has a little bit of humor to it. And what do you think about it artistically? It has some nice.
Yes, I did. I definitely liked the way the facial expressions and the motion. The colors weren't my all time favorite. Like I wouldn't put it up there with, one that we are about to discuss in a minute or so, Mr. Magoo.
Right.
But or even that Christmas Carol one number that we just discussed. But I can imagine. When I was a little kid and I heard the song Frosty the Snowman, and one is apt to try to visualize what did happen to this creation on the day he became animated, and so why not they assigned him a form and an mm-hmm. adventure and these children who adored him and for a brief
25.
Yeah.
Close to 25.
Gave him a life.
Unfortunately, now when they air these things on network, they cut the time even more because they want more advertisements on there, because that's what pays the bills. And back in the day, it probably was about 25 minutes. And now if they air, if they're airing it, it's probably going to be like 20, 21 minutes because mm-hmm. they want. So they're constantly cutting into these things. That's why I hate watching them on TV, because they're just constantly interrupting the show with commercials. Mm-hmm. And, especially if you get something really good and you just want to watch it, and all of a sudden, they're cutting in between a scene or something, a sequence. And it's a cash grab. That's why the specials exist. They're basically, they put them on every year because they get a decent audience. They get a very decent audience, and they're, you know, they're basically there to make money. Mm-hmm. So, but back in the day when these specials were produced, and we're going to talk about one that talks about commercialism, and it was a major subject of that special. And it's really kind of interesting when, you know, these things are interrupted more than they should be. It's almost like, well, this thing is telling you about, you know, the commercialism of Christmas.
Yes.
And meanwhile, they're cutting into it every 3 minutes to put a couple of commercials on because of the money. So anyway.
But I did enjoy it. He was a joyous character.
He is.
I liked the way he got the children to be happy and enjoy, you know, the snow. And, you know, when he's, let's make a parade out of it, shall we? You know, and I mean, I'm not going to lie. When he got locked in that hot house, that greenhouse, and he started to get a little hot and melty, I won't say edge of my seat, but I will say I was nervous.
Yeah.
I was rooting for him.
Well, he ends up as a puddle. And what is it, Karen? That's her name?
Karen.
She's,
these names.
She's crying. She's crying.
I know.
Yeah. She's crying. So it was a sad moment. I think a lot of people react to that. Mm-hmm. Because he's such a fun, you know, roly-poly type character, you know. But anyway. And Paul Frees, I was saying, was Santa Claus in that.
I enjoyed it.
I know. Anyway. Okay, so let's go to the one that we were just referring to about commercialism, because I guess that's a segue to that, is A Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh, boy, yes.
Now, Charlie Brown Christmas is one of the few, and I have to say, you know, these are Christmas specials, and there are a lot of people from different religions watch these things because they're kind of generic in terms of they're not really addressing Christmas per se, just the stuff around Christmas. So they'll, you know, snowmen, you know, winter stuff, you know.
Gift giving.
But they're not addressing what Christmas is really all about. And to their credit, Rankin Bass does that a few times because they actually did specials that address Jesus Christ on them. And this particular special, Charlie Brown Christmas, Charles Schulz, who wrote it and got an Emmy for it, wanted a lot of things on this special that the networks were not happy about. And what do you think those were?
Well, first of all, I've always known of the Charlie Brown Christmas movie, and I've always been familiar with the beautiful music that I've enjoyed. That's always playing at every Christmas party that, you know, you go to.
Right.
In fact, I was doing some Christmas shopping, and there was one store that had a piano player, and what was he playing?
Christmas Time Is Here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've known of it. And one thing that you told me was that they didn't want Charles Schulz to incorporate the jazz music into it.
Yeah. It was a gentleman named Vince Guaraldi who composed the music for the special. But when I think the network heard about it, they were like, this is not Christmas music. They're expecting something like, you know, Up on the Roof, Up on the Housetop, right?
Oh, yes.
Or or Jingle Bells and stuff like that. There is none of that in that special. It's all music created by this guy, Vince Guaraldi. And I think he does use a Christmas theme in it, which is, Christmas Tree.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does a jazz version of that. But I think all the rest of the music in there, with the exception of Christmas Time Is Here, they're not all Christmassy songs.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the network didn't want it. The other thing, too, was they wanted Charlie Brown because Charlie Brown was very, very popular. But I think the other thing, too, that they were not keen on were the voices, because they actually use kids' voices in the special. And it kind of sounds a little bit amateurish. And I guess that was one of their big beefs.
Interesting.
But the other big beef about the special was the fact that Linus reads something from the Bible that talks about the meaning of Christmas.
Hard for me to believe that anybody would have a beef about that, given the story. But
yeah, that's what, well, it's about, yeah. But there's a big part of the special which probably horrified the networks even more, CBS. I think it was CBS that aired it. And somebody will correct me. It might have been ABC or NBC. But the big problem was the whole thing about commercialism.
Right.
Which is basically, you know, they're talking about it throughout the special. And they're saying how Christmas is so commercialized, you know, with the lights on the Snoopy's doghouse.
Right. It's yeah. Charlie Brown's big beef with
yeah.
with Christmas, basically.
Yeah.
And it's really bumming him out.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things here that the networks did not like. How do you feel about the whole thing?
Honestly, this one, I loved it. I had never really – I know that Charlie Brown has the pumpkin patch one for the Halloween, and I always knew that there was the raggy, shaggy, you know, dejected, practically needleless conifer that's referred to as the Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
Yeah.
And so – and usually when you go by a natural tree and then you see, like, the dried up rejects in the corner and they're like $5 Charlie Brown Christmas tree. I get the reference. I just had never seen the whole special and I loved it. I had no idea Charlie Brown was such a curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Like these days he would have been put on some kind of
a Prozac.
Or well, I don't even know.
I love the special because it's not trying to be anything other than what it is. You know, they could have taken that and they could have done everything that the network wanted them to do. Like, you know, give us the big Christmassy music. Give us, you know, a big happy ending. You know, have Santa Claus come down the chimney. You know, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Has none of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's about them putting on a school play.
Right.
And how bad Charlie Brown is as a director, because he's basically directing the play, and they're all unhappy with him. Nobody wants to do the direction, but they give it to him because, well, that's all they had left, and nobody wants to do it. So
he was in I'm pretty sure I've been there. I know I've been there, and most people sometimes allow themselves to get slip into that Christmas funk.
Mm-hmm.
And you start feeling like, I don't know, you know, what I'm doing. It's the end of the year. What can I give people? Everybody has everything. You know, nobody appreciates a dang on thing I do around this place. And you're baking bread and you're decorating and you're vacuuming pine needles up 24/7 and you're just exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody gets into that Christmas funk. And I think that Charlie Brown was feeling the Christmas funk, and he needed Linus to kind of be like, "Hey, buddy, buckaroo,
yeah,
cheer up, fella."
Yeah.
And the thing is, yes, it has turned into a highly commercialized time of year, and yes, there are people from all religions who like to enjoy Christmas, and it's wonderful that they do, and it takes on a meaning for other people, and that's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also nice, and I am very appreciative to be reminded of the real meaning, where it comes from, because I think that Charlie Brown, like Ebenezer Scrooge and like Marjorie Stewart, once in a blue moon on Christmas, need to be reminded of the real spirit and meaning of Christmas.
Yes.
And thank you, Linus, and
Charles M. Schulz.
Charles M. Schulz.
Yes.
Amen.
Amen. There you go.
No, it was a beautiful. I loved watching the kids, the children in the school do their jazzy dance.
Mm-hmm.
That had me in stitches.
Oh, it's fun. Yeah.
I never realized that Snoopy was such a ham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Just.
He's the most cartoony character out of that whole thing.
Yes.
Him and Woodstock.
Yeah.
And Woodstock is not really in this.
Mm-hmm.
He's introduced later in the specials and other specials. But. Yeah,
and now, scripted beautifully. I there were so many things I was just laughing out loud about.
It's fresh to me. It's very fresh because it's not using the same cartoony stuff that's been done.
No. And the music is lovely.
Music is wonderful. Yeah. And even the artwork is fun. The artwork is really fun. It's simple, but it's expressive. And you know, the characters act, you know?
Yes.
And it's limited animation,
almost stick figures with clothes on.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, I thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah.
And every hill that Charles Schulz died on, the music,
mm-hmm.
the message, and the, you know, commentary about the commercialization of that holiday,
mm-hmm.
he was well worth it.
It was well worth it.
In my esteem.
You know,
but it is still not my number one pick.
You know who the hero is of that special? To get it aired.
No.
You have any idea?
No.
Coca-Cola.
Of all people.
Coca-Cola was actually the sponsor of the special, and so CBS didn't want to air it.
Isn't that fascinating?
I think they delivered it a week or two before, and they delivered the special, and they looked at it, and because it was right up to, like, airtime, they didn't want to air it, but Coca-Cola still pushed it through because they were paying for it. They're paying for the advertising. They figured, okay, we've got nothing else. Let's just put it on. So they aired it. And to their surprise, it got a big market share. They ended up putting the soundtrack out. I don't know if it was at the same time, probably not at the same time, but it eventually became a soundtrack album. And it ended up winning an Emmy. So, you know, they did something really well there.
That's amazing.
And they got rewarded for it.
That really is amazing. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't Coca-Cola basically responsible for the image of Santa Claus as
yes.
we know him to look like today?
Yeah, it's amazing,
that
right?
color red and...
Yeah.
Yeah,
because
back
in
the day, it took all types of forms.
It took a lot of different forms, and I think they kind of solidified it with an ad, and that kind of became the icon. Even though some people have followed it, you know, I mean, to this day, Santa's changing. I mean, there's a not really talking about this, but I'm going to just mention it. A Polar Express has a bizarre-looking Santa, I think. He's kind of thin, you know. He still has some weight on him, but he's not going with that image. But, you know, even with the Rankin Bass specials, most of them, Santa Claus is this jovial, you know,
roly-poly
kind of character, you know. So, and I think a lot of specials that have been done follow that. And, I mean, to me, that's the image of Santa Claus. That's what I grew up with. So we're pretty much into it on all these specials. Let's see. So we should be talking about, and we didn't talk about this yet. It's another Rankin Bass special, and it's The Little Drummer Boy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Little Drummer Boy came out in 1968. I believe it aired on NBC. It's a special that does acknowledge Christ in it. And it's pretty heavy, I think, because Little Drummer Boy loses his parents in this, you know. And we were talking about Nestor before. Nestor loses somebody close to him. But in here, he loses his parents. And this is not – it's hard to find the Little Drummer Boy anywhere. But it is very well done. Once again, same formula. They got Greer Garson and I believe Jose Ferrer that did voices on it. And it's I saw it as a kid. I was maybe 7 when I saw it. And I loved it. I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful special and a great soundtrack. What did you like about it? I just really loved the whole thing. It's puppet. It's once again the stop motion animation, but it's I think it's just so well executed from beginning to end, and it ends on a good note.
I agree, and like I said. As I mentioned earlier, this stop motion animation, the puppets, the kind of squeaky, you know,
herky jerky.
Sorry, that's a better word. There were times when I was nodding off, not during the little drummer boy. I mean, he is a character from the Bible, and you know, people are wondering, well, let's figure out his deal. And it is sad. There is sadness and violence and, is trying to kind of explain why he is a recluse and he just keeps himself to himself with his animals and his drum. Mm-hmm. And then it shows how he gives his gift of drum playing to the newborn Christ and how that is a revealing way that he really does show pure love, the purity of his love for the lamb.
Yeah, he's not
so it was a beautiful story. It had bright moments. It had silly moments. It had the dancing and the music. The songs were lovely. The dancing to the musical numbers was great. The costumes on these puppets were the attention to detail just blew my mind.
Yeah,
and I wasn't expecting that. And so my attention was there straight through the whole special.
Yeah.
And, it definitely had a beautiful ending. And I liked the story.
I really like the story. I think one of the things here is, like, in contrast to a lot of the Rankin Bass specials, is the characters are generally happy and they're likable. With the boy, I mean, you feel for him, but he's miserable throughout the whole show. It's a 25 minute special, but he's not. Maybe at the beginning he's a little bit happy when they show him in the past, you know, before he loses his parents, and then he's just miserable. He is miserable throughout the whole thing until. There's a moment where his little lamb is basically hit by a wagon and is pretty much dead, and the lamb is resurrected by the baby Jesus, and I feel it's a very emotional moment because I think Greer Garson's narration, I really feel that she. Ramps up that emotional level at the end because it's like she's saying, you know, and, you know, he didn't, you know, finally he didn't realize, you know, he didn't believe that all people were evil, you know, because throughout the whole show, he's not happy with anybody. The only creatures he likes are the animals that are with him. And, you know, that's where his love is for, but he hates everybody, just hates everybody until the end, and then finally he lightens up and he realizes, yeah, it was just some people he hated, but he extended that to everybody, and now he was different.
A lot of these movies, these specials, have to shine a light on the sad reality of man's inhumanity to man in order to illuminate, by contrast, the purity of a real love.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
well, that was very evidenced in this one.
Yeah, with all stories, you know, you want to, you know, when you're fashioning a story, you have to kind of bring the audiences down in order to get the joy. And so, you know, it's kind of like you start off, you kind of even keel, and then something happens, and then the characters go down a notch. You know?
Right. You're melting Frosty.
Yeah.
You're kidnapping the drummer boy. You're abusing Rudolph because he has a nose. let's get with the program. This is how it's done.
I know. I get abused on my nose. Anyway, well, no, I think it's a underrated special. Unfortunately, it's it's available on Blu-ray, but the special needs to be restored, and I don't know if there's any money for that because it is. I feel it's like a forgotten special. I feel like it doesn't get the love that it really deserves.
I never even knew it existed.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But maybe that's because it's one of the ones that has more of a religious bent.
Yeah. Unfortunately, these things, if it's more religious in nature, or it acknowledges Christ, I think that's a like a big no-no, and I don't consider it no. I think it should be there. It should be out there, and people should be seeing it. I think it's good that especially if this is what your family believes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be out there. I think people should be able to view it. And if people don't like viewing it, then they can always turn it off.
They don't have to watch it.
Yeah. It's.
I don't see what's so offensive.
I don't think there's anything offensive about it. I think it's just, if you don't want to view it, don't view it. You know, that's all. So anyway, it is one of my faves. Let's see.
It's of the list that you gave me, that mm-hmm. would definitely be one of my favorites.
One of your favorites.
A lot of details, a lot of beauty, and
yeah.
The music was great. It was great fun.
Do you have any questions or comments about the podcast? Please email Brian at cartoonerific.com. Your email may be featured in one of our future shows.
That was pretty interesting. So it's part one of the 12 specials of Christmas. And if you want to hear more, it's going to be uploaded in a couple of days, or like I said, a week later, or actually 4 days later, you can listen to them back to back. And hope you're enjoying them. If you have any comments, please send them to us at brian@cartoonerific.com. That's cartoonerific.com. I just want to give a shout out to James Lopez. He uploaded the Hullabaloo first episode onto YouTube, and it's quite amazing. Looks like it was done by a big studio like Disney, but no, it was done by James Lopez and a team of animators that worked on it with wonderful, brilliant effects animation. So if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend to take a look. Pups of Liberty is another one. Bert and Jennifer Klein have put up a new episode on there of their short tales. So if you haven't seen that, please check that out as well. Also on YouTube. All wonderful stuff. Anyway, if you really like what you're listening to, please subscribe or tell a friend. Go out there and just tell them that you really like the podcast, and they should really listen to it if they're into cartoons. So there. Anyway, I want everybody to have a great day. I want you to have an excellent week. And stay tuned, because we got more episodes coming up. Thanks for tuning in.
This has been a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
The Cartoonerific podcast is copyright 2024 by Cartoonerific Studios Incorporated. All rights reserved.